Part 1. Chapter 1. 2005. She was being ridiculous, no question about it. Yes, it had been years since she studied French, and she hadn't exactly been a top student. But surely she could muddle along well enough to buy a pastry to have with her afternoon coffee. The shops were there to sell their wares, not judge her accent. And with that thought, Molly Sutton perched a straw hat, brand new, Véritable Panama, the sign had promised, on her wild curls, and marched down her short driveway and into the village, determined to get her first éclair, having moved to Castillac just 3 days before. 3 days had not been long enough to learn her way around the rabbit warren of narrow streets, but Molly had a good sense of direction, and she was having one of those moments of elation that expats sometimes experience, when they are not in the grip of their adopted country's bureaucracy, or finding out they have just eaten something like lark pie. The golden limestone of the buildings was warm and lovely. It was the end of summer, but there was no chill in the air, and she kept up a brisk pace, peering into windows and backyards, drinking it all in. She had no idea where to find a pâtisserie, but steered towards the center of the village. Interesting how everyone seems to hang all their underwear on the line. Doesn't it dry hard as cardboard, she wondered. She stopped at the backyard of one house and looked at the clothes strung out on the line, dancing rather gaily in the breeze. She was tempted to hop over the fence and touch a pair of those expensive-looking panties to see just how soft they were. But maybe trespassing to touch the neighbor's underthings might not make the best first impression. She could see that the underwear was La Perla. Soft, well-cut, très cher, and probably worth every penny, she mused. I think if I had underwear that nice, I wouldn't hang it out in the baking sun. It deserves hand-washing at the least, and should be, I don't know, dried by the beating of hummingbird wings or something. Molly stood at the fence, looking at the three bikinis and a cami, neatly clipped with wooden clothespins. The alley was so quiet. No sound but the steady hum of cicadas. She looked to see if anyone was around, and slowly leaned against the fence and reached her fingers towards a pair of bikinis with a pink ribbon running around the top. Someone shouted something she didn't understand. Molly jerked her hand back and looked around to see who had spoken. The man next door had come into his backyard and was talking to his neighbor over the fence. Quickly, she ducked her head and trotted around the next turn. A street of shops was just ahead. A bustle of people out doing errands, having a mid-morning petit café, and gossiping with neighbors. Molly wandered along looking at the unfamiliar shapes of the rooftops, at the signage and windows, listening to French but not catching a single word, smelling roasting chicken that smelled so good it brought tears to her eyes. Everything was not what she was used to, and she loved everything if only for that. The street curved around to the right, and then straight ahead was a large fountain. Several students from the art school were perched on the rim with drawing pads and serious expressions as they sketched. Molly walked up and sat on the rim herself, people watching, until she remembered the éclair and went off to look for a pâtisserie in earnest. She had loads of work to do. The cottage on her property was nowhere near ready for guests, and she had her first booking coming in a matter of days. She should be shopping for sheets and pillows and giving the place a good scrubbing, instead of wandering around hunting for sweets. But she was feeling indulgent. After the couple of years she had just been through, she was in France seeking pleasure and calm, and she was going to wallow in it, savoring every delicious moment. Ah, yes. She found herself in front of a small shop painted on the outside in red enamel, with gold lettering over the doorway in a flourishing script, Pâtisserie Boujold. The smell of butter and vanilla practically grabbed her by the shirt and pulled her inside. "Bonjour, madame," said a small man behind the counter. "Bonjour, monsieur," said Molly, her eyes wide. Under the glass, row after row of pastries so beautiful they looked like jewels. Delectable, mouth-watering jewels, arranged by a true artist, color-coordinated and symmetrical as a parterre. Should she go for the millefeuille, with its bajillion layers of crisp pastry sandwiched with custard and a swirly icing on top? She leaned forward, nearly pressing her nose on the glass. Strawberry tarts looked amazing. but they were out of season and probably didn't taste as good as they looked. The cream puff with whipped cream spilling out of it was calling to her, but she had so dreamed of an éclair.
Madame?
Molly snapped out of a sort of trance. She took a deep breath and gathered her courage.
The pastries, she pretty,
she said, wincing at her horrible French.
The man smiled and stepped out from around the counter. His eyes went straight to her chest and lingered there.
Molly sighed. Then, so quickly as to verge on rude, she made her choice, paid, and left with a small waxed bag and a silly grin on her face. She was in Castillac, her new home, about to eat her first real French éclair in almost 20 years. I'm finally here. Finally in France, for good.
Yes, mademoiselle, how may I help? Asked Thérèse Perrault, who had only joined the tiny Castillac force a few months ago.
It's, well, I'm at Degas,
the young woman said, meaning the prestigious art school in the village. Perrault waited. She was already so weary of dealing with nothing but traffic violations and lost dogs, she hardly dared hope this call would turn into something more intriguing.
My roommate is... she's missing. I haven't seen her since yesterday. I'm getting worried.
May I ask your name?
Mary Beth Donnelly.
American?
Yes.
And your roommate's name?
Her name is Amy Bennett. She's British. And she's the most responsible student in the whole school. That's why I'm so worried. She just wouldn't run off without saying anything to anyone.
Perrault was scribbling notes, trying to get the student's phrasing exactly.
I understand. Have you notified anyone at the school? I mentioned it to one of the teachers this morning, Professor Gallimard. She didn't show up to his class.
Exactly how long has she been missing?
I had dinner with her last night. Then I went out with my boyfriend, and she went back to the studio to work on a drawing that's due. She never came back to the dorm, and I haven't seen her all day,
the young woman said, her voice catching. It's not even 24 hours, said Perrault, her tone not dismissive but sympathetic. And I'm afraid the gendarmerie only actively searches for missing minors. Can you tell me how old Amy is?
She's 19. I'm sorry, said Mary Beth. I don't know what the missing person's procedures here are or anything. I don't want to sound like a flake, officer, but I have a bad feeling.
Officer Perrault told her that almost always these situations resolve themselves happily. She asked if Amy had a boyfriend, if she had a car, if she had access to money, and she carefully wrote down Mary Beth's answers in her notebook. Before calling her boss, Chief Dufour, on his cell, Thérèse Perrault took a moment to think through everything Mary Beth Donnelly had told her and to fix the young woman's voice in her head. It was only an impression, and she did not have enough experience to be able to know yet whether her impressions tended to be correct. But Perrault trusted Mary Beth Donnelly and did not think she was a flake or unstable, or anything but a concerned friend who had something legitimate to worry about. Then in quick succession she grinned and looked chastened, as she felt thrilled that something had finally happened in the village of Castillac now that she was on the force, and then felt guilty for being so excited about someone else's potential tragedy. Like everyone else in the village, Perrault knew about the two other women who had disappeared without a trace, but those cases had been several years ago. The first one, Valerie Boutier, had actually been part of the reason Perrault had pursued a career in law enforcement. She had been 18 when Valerie disappeared, and while she had not known her personally, in the usual way of Castillac, she had friends who had known her, and family members who knew Valerie's family one way or another. Perrault had followed the investigation closely and tried to puzzle out what had happened. She still thought of it from time to time, and wondered whether new evidence would someday turn up that would allow the young woman's abductor to be identified. No body had ever been found, nor even any evidence of wrongdoing. But Thérèse had no doubt someone had killed Valerie Boutier. No doubt at all. Valerie had not been the only one. And now there was another.